Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, actor Vince Van Patten talks about his lifelong love of poker, his new movie coming out this weekend, 7 Days to Vegas, and his dad, the infamous Dick Van Patten.
And as a little gambler myself, I was just always looking for action. I'd have to go to school and I'd pitch quarters against other kids, you know, to get some action. Listen, in the 90s, my game started, it started getting bigger and bigger. And my father was playing it in the 90s. And it went from a game that you could win or lose $2,000-$3,000 to a game, well, in 2005 and 6, where you could really lose a car. Look, it's 280 miles from the Valley to Vegas. That's what the bet is all about. Can you do it in 7 days?
Today on the show, actor and commentator of the World Poker Tour, Vince Van Patten, talks about all things poker. Stay close.
Hey, this is Vince Van Patten, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Malibu, California today. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 9 years, for God's sakes, Vince, I'm in my 10th year of podcasting. I'm like 120 in podcasting years. Whether you're a longtime fan or not, you guys, welcome to Storyworthy. I am so excited today because my guest, and the reason why I'm out here in Malibu, is because I am with actor Vince Van Patten. But I have to say, Vince, you're not just an actor, right?
No, I guess I have other things I do too, yes.
You're so well-rounded. Like, you have so many interesting things going on in your life. I mean, you're not at all one-sided. You know, there's obviously there's the acting, but there's the tennis, and there's the producing, and then there's the poker, and
right.
There's
That's
so much true. Happening.
Lots happened, yes. I have many chapters in my life. I was a child actor, and then, like you said, I went on the professional tennis tour, and I was in the top 25 in the world and played all around the world for 10 years. I've had a crazy life, but I haven't always been successful in everything I do, obviously. So many different failures. But along the way, I wind up doing something and it kind of clicks again.
Yeah.
So I've been very lucky.
Yeah, but it's just really interesting. Like, honestly, I feel like I grew up with you because you were always on my TV screen.
Yeah.
As a kid. I mean, I remember just all those little parts you would do. The courtship of Eddie's father. Love Boat. Fantasy Island. Yeah. Like, you did all those
shows. Oh, yeah.
Shows.
I was a kid actor at age 9, came out to Hollywood, and I never stopped working. And I would do guest spots on Bonanza, High Chaparral,
Gunsmoke.
All those great shows. Yeah, it was fun. And then that lasted until I was 18, and then I went on the tennis circuit. But you're right. I've done a lot of acting in my life. And then I came back into my 30s, and I came back from the tennis circuit and got back into acting as well.
Yeah. It's a fascinating career. And I guess, you know, I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I sit there, you know, with my brothers and sisters, and we watch, you know, the evening lineup of Love Boat, Fantasy Island, whatever. And you would see Van Patten a lot, not just you, but you'd see your dad. And it was just kind of like, I feel like I almost grew up with your family.
Yeah. Well, my brother Jimmy Van Patten and Timmy Van Patten, they're all actors. And it's been a clan. So you can't get away from us from those old shows. By the way, I love watching the station. What is it? I forget the name of the station, but it's all the old classics.
Old stuff, yeah.
And it feels good. You know, it's not, I don't even want to watch my own stuff. It's kind of embarrassing. But when I look at those old shows, you get a good good feeling about it.
I don't blame you.
Very relaxing.
I mean, you got a lot under your belt. And also, it's an escape from what's going on right now.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You watch yourself an old Courtship of Eddie's Father. All your cares just drip away.
That's right.
But today, you bring forth the topic poker. And I know you do have a lot of poker in your life because you're the host of the World Poker Tour.
Yeah, season 18 we're going into on the World Poker Tour. I've been the host and commentator. Yeah.
I just feel like it's so apropos. The movie we're going to talk about today, 7 Days to Vegas, it's so apropos that you are the host of the World Poker Tour and there is so much poker in your life. You're like the face of poker.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I've been playing poker since I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
My father, Dick Van Patten, was a great actor and a gambler. And he loved all forms of gambling, the horse races and poker.
Really?
And he had 2 to 3 poker games a week at his apartment in the Valley, the Sherman Oaks, with all kinds of people. And as a kid, I would watch these people play. And they were playing for nice stakes. Now, this is before poker got popular, and no one knew about poker. No one cared about it, right?
But, I grew up playing Penny Ante, and mm-hmm. my parents had their poker night on Saturday nights, and the stakes weren't high, but I remember the games. You know, it was like all the fun games, like No Peek and baseball, and everything was wild.
Exactly.
And they're listening to Sinatra, and everybody's smoking cigarettes. Yeah. It was like a beautiful era.
It was. And my father used to play, and I used to watch him play. And he said, one day he went, you want to learn? I was about 13, 14. And you want to learn? I said, yes, I love the game. Yeah. And I'm watching at night in the hallway. And he finally said, okay. And he teaches me how to play. And he was a good player.
Yeah.
And I learned the game, and I kept watching. And at age 14 and a half, he said, okay, you've watched long enough. You're good enough. Get in the game. I said, what? Really? Okay. 14 and a half years old. Now, I had made a little money as a child actor, so I played with my own money.
How much money are you
talking
about?
You could win or lose in my father's game in Sherman Oaks, $500 to $1,500 a night.
Wow.
Which was big money back
then.
That's
a lot of money.
This was a big Hollywood game back then.
So people are anteing. The ante is 20 bucks.
It was five and five at the time, but it got big, and we played every type of game like you talked about.
What was your favorite?
Oh, seven card high low is a great game, but you did play threes and nines a while. Five card draw was a great game, and then you roll on. I mean, we knew every game.
Yeah, and Suicide King is wild, and my father, I always heard him saying, jacks are better, trips to win.
Yeah, so I used to play in that game and did well, eventually when I was 16, I loved poker so much that you couldn't play legalized poker except for in Gardena, California.
Yeah,
they had poker houses. They had about six poker houses, and everybody would go there. You'd deal your own cards.
What?
And you'd play crazy games. And I went down there at age 16. I got in my car, and I had a fake beard mustache made up because you had to be 21. They were very strict. And I would put on this stupid fake beard mustache
and
to play.
Worked.
And I would be
and
dealing
worked.
Cards. It worked. I won.
Did
sometimes I lost.
No,
they look at you, and they look at me closely, and they would look at me like, he's a little freak.
Yeah. Like,
what is this? What is this thing?
Yeah.
And then a cop would finally come over and say, are you 21? I'd say, and I'd look at him, and I had a go-to answer. I'd say, 21. I said, I'm 32. I'm a professional jockey at Santa Anita. How dare you?
Wow.
And they would go, okay.
Wow.
Just ask.
Is so smart.
Whatever.
So first of all, you're a child actor, and you pull that out of your hat.
Yeah.
And you're small because you're a jockey.
Yeah, that was a jockey.
I would never have questioned that.
Went to Vegas with my buddy when I was 16 with the same beard and mustache. We drive there. My parents didn't know. 11 o'clock at night with $17 worth of change. And I put on... We get to the MGM Grand, and we're going to play slots, right? And we get there after 4 in the morning, and I put on the goatee, and he puts on the mustache. We share it.
Yeah.
He was 16. He looked 12. So he's got this thing on. I got mine on. We play the slots. We lose everything in an hour.
Oh,
okay?
My gosh.
We're broke. We're broke. It's 4-5 o'clock. We don't know how to get home. We're out of gas, of course. We're idiots, right? How do you think we did it? This is horrible, but we had to go into the fountain. There was a fountain at the MGM Grand back then with coins in it. Swear to God, jumped in there.
You stole coins.
We did.
You ever tell $5, your dad that story?
Yes.
First part when you went? Why didn't you just tell him from the get-go that you were going there? In other words, if he was so supportive of your gambling habits, would
people
he have cared?
Didn't know. Parents didn't know what you were doing back then.
It's
true. You're 16 years old. If you have a car, you flew around. You did whatever you wanted.
So
you lied to your parents. I didn't lie much. I would never. But I just didn't tell him certain things.
The communication wasn't there.
It
wasn't like texting and cell phones and stuff.
Exactly. So then I graduated from there, and I've always moved up my game, and it's been fun. And then in the 90s, when I came back from the tennis circuit, which I played for 10 years, I started having a game. I started having another game with my father.
I am so impressed by your tennis career because I play 3-4 days a week. I love tennis.
Oh, great.
It's totally my game. And I'm so enthralled that you beat McEnroe twice.
I did. I was top 25. I was the ATP Rookie of the Year.
And you won that. You won that big game, the Seiko, in Japan.
Biggest indoor tournament in the world. Yeah.
Right. And so, I'm just trying to get my head around that.
Yeah.
Because acting is one thing, and you did all these guest roles, but then tennis. I mean, I could see the correlation between poker and tennis, but not so much acting and tennis.
No, it had nothing to do with it. So I was not a good junior tennis player. I was a hack. I was hardly ranked in Southern California, so no one ever gave me a chance to make it on the pro circuit. I don't know how it happened. It came out of, like, I got better when I was 18 or 19. I started lifting weights.
Did you go down to Florida to train?
No, nothing like that. We went to one coach. I was self-taught. Went to one teacher. My father said, "Take this. How do you think he's going to be?" He said, at very best, he'll be a good club player. That's what the coach said. So I never had lessons. Anyway, long story short, I think I got in the top in the world because of just anger, because everyone said, you can't do it. They laughed at me. They laughed. And I think out of anger, I pushed myself to a different degree and believed in myself. And I think at the right time, I can hit the right shot. I just have an inner faith that I can make the shot and gamble. And that sort of moves over into poker too. I was a good player
because
I will take chances in gambling.
I see that competition. Yes. I see that correlation.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking about, like, it seems like as an actor, you'd be somewhat privileged, especially growing up with the family you grew up in, and you're kind of privileged. Now you're going to put yourself out there because tennis is hard. That training is hard, and you can't like fake it.
What else could I do? I love the game. It was fun. I love the competition. I love getting when you get beat and then you come back and you get beat the guy 6 months later.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And the game itself is so pure and there's no politics whatsoever.
I know.
If you're good, they have to give you that ranking, which I loved it.
Yeah. And nobody cares about the language being spoken.
No.
It's the same across the world. The court is always the same.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have a tennis court, or do you?
Don't. No. I ran away from the game. Now I like going to public
Where do you
parks
play?
And Malibu, we have the Malibu Racquet Club.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll play
a little
bit. I've
played at Pepperdine several times.
It's great. Yeah.
That's a great place to play. They've got like 20 courts.
Of course, yeah.
I also felt like even if I had all the money in the world, I don't know if I would have my own tennis court, because I feel like part of the game is the community.
So true. Me
and
too.
I
don't like
I mean?
Having my own court because you're isolated. I'm like, this is fun. One person across the net. I want to be where people are. I want to watch them. I want to look at them.
Have
lunch
an example.
There. I like clubs.
Me too. Here's an example. I play a lot. And Gavin Rosdale of the band Bush used to play right next to me for years. And we didn't know each other, but I thought we gave each other a hello, kind of a friendly. And then one day I don't see Gavin anymore at the courts. And then I read that he and Gwen Stefani bought this house and they have a tennis court. And now I'll never see him again. And I like to think that he misses me. I mean, I'm not saying he does. But
he works out with my brother all the time in the Valley at his court.
Well, so ask him if he misses Gavin. Christine.
Absolutely. But, I love public tennis courts as well, not just clubs, because they're wide open. There's no backdrops.
Well, that's
and
Vermont
you see everybody.
Canyon.
So
yeah,
it's very social.
Canyon. Yeah. And it's also, especially where I play, the canyon. I mean, there's coyotes and there's rattlesnakes and there's like nature and it's all happening. Anyway, I'm thrilled that you're here. By the way, I have a note here I wanted to say. Your dad, by the way, was definitely, I mean, I love my dad, but your dad, the Shaggy D.A., Freaky Friday, High Anxiety, those movies.
Yeah, Spaceballs, and then Eight Is Enough, of course.
Were people jealous of you that was your dad? Like, people were like, you have the greatest dad in the world. He's like America's dad.
Yeah, people loved him, and maybe they were, but he was a great father. Everybody thinks he was, after a while with Eight Is Enough, that he was this just saccharine, very normal, just normal dad. Little did they know.
Yeah,
this
he's got the poker tournaments going on in the
Valley.
He
cared less about acting or acting nice. He was a great guy, nice guy, but he also was a colorful guy who loved the racetrack and poker and playing tennis.
Yeah.
Play tennis in the morning
for
2 hours, jump in the pool, have a quick little lunch, go to the racetrack, and then he'd play poker all evening.
Wow.
That was his life.
That's not a bad life, man.
He loved it.
Not a bad life.
Yeah.
Did you wear those super short shorts in
tennis?
Yeah. They were so short.
Yep. They were like, what were they like?
I don't know, but they were like little and white, and they had pockets.
Yep.
And even
It'll
the
come
girl,
back.
And the
It'll
girls' dresses. I mean, like even now when I play, I could never wear one of those little dresses, no matter what I look like, because I feel like it's too sexy.
Yeah.
Like I wear like ripped t-shirts, and I don't want that to be any part of it. Like I feel more competitive than... What do I look like if I was in a dress like that? I'd be like, what am I, in lingerie?
Yeah, gosh. This true story. In 81, I was playing at Wimbledon against the top seed. I'm on second court, the number one court, and I'm in these tight, tight shorts. I'm indoors to play with this outfit, but they're too tight.
Yeah, you have
to. With 2-all in the first set, I split my shorts. And it's true. And I'm so embarrassed, I don't say anything.
Oh my
so
God.
For the rest of the match, I just kind of moved around very slowly. I could never really make. I should have said
Did
something
you win?
And stopped. Of course I lost.
Oh,
I got
shit.
Blown out after that. Never told anyone. Split the shorts. Because that's how tight they were back then.
Yeah. And you don't have a coach that you can talk to. Because the coach is in the stands. You're not allowed to speak.
No, I should. I was
You're
dumb.
All on your
I
own.
I was dumb. I was all on my
if
own.
You, did you have another pair with you anyway? You probably
would. You'd go definitely in there to change. You just didn't think of it back then.
Yeah. You didn't think
Now they take a lot of breaks.
If you had said that to the ref and you were like pointing at your their pants. People would think, like, he shit his pants. Vince Van Patten shit his pants. He's running to the... And you're coming out in different...
That would even be worse. Yeah, you're right. So,
Wait, listen. What do you like to play most on? I've never played on grass. What is that?
Grass is great.
Fast, right?
It's fast. It's aesthetically the best. Yeah. It doesn't help the best game, but it's just like old classic tennis. Clay's great. It's beautiful. I liked... My best surface was Indoor Supreme. I had all my huge wins on Indoor Supreme. I just
don't know why.
That's
just a hard surface?
It's sort of a rubber indoor event.
Interesting.
Hard court's pretty solid, too.
Interesting. My boyfriend, Rafael Nadal, you know, he's the king of clay. Have you ever met him?
I haven't. What a great guy,
like
though.
Him so much. Oh. He does such good work.
Yeah.
I follow him on Twitter and the Rafael Nadal Academy, and he's just so solid.
He's great.
I love that guy.
Yeah, you got to.
Anyway, all right, you guys. So listen, we're going to get right now to your story about poker. Let's hear more poker stories. And this is really all culminating is because we want to talk about your new movie coming out.
Yeah.
Which, 7 Days to Vegas is the name of the film.
Yes.
And what, to me, this whole movie comes down to, because I got to see the movie at the Palm Springs Film Festival. What the whole movie comes down to is that gamblers will bet on anything.
Yep, for sure. And wrote this movie based on my true story of the game, my game that got very big in the 90s and then the early 2000s. The game got bigger and bigger and bigger in Beverly Hills. A lot of it is fictionalized, but I did make, it wasn't about the players. It wasn't about the poker. It was about the side bets that we would make.
Yeah.
And one of the craziest side bets I ever made was that I could walk from LA to Las Vegas in 7 days for a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And they all came to watch.
Yeah.
And that's what this movie, 7 Days to Vegas, is all about.
It's so fun because it's a road picture, but it's also a not a hitchhiking picture, but you're alongside the road the whole time and you're wearing a suit.
I know.
Which, even at the end, when you're filthy, dirty, and falling down, you look so hot in that suit. I'm just saying.
That was one of the conditions of the bet.
A really fun touch to the movie.
That's so funny. Yeah, has to wear a suit all the way, and it's very hot. Yeah, it's coming. It's getting great reviews. People love it.
Oh, I know.
It comes out September 20th, and then VOD, video everywhere. iTunes especially, and Amazon. So
it got some amazing reviews. The Hollywood Reporter said, funny, fresh, insightful, and entertaining as hell.
Yeah.
That's what I felt like when I saw it.
And obviously
we're not giving away the ending, but there is a twist at the ending that is so damn great.
Interesting, okay.
People cheer
la, la, la,
out loud.
La, 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 la,
cheer out loud. But people are cheering.
Yeah,
seriously.
Okay.
People are like cheering to the screen. I love those kinds of movies where it's like interactive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have a great cast of characters in the film.
Yeah.
And some of the funniest shots to me are, you know, your friends, the people and the guys in the bus that are following you. And you've got this shot and it's like the square front of the bus and you see the four heads of the people, the driver and then the three other guys
other
guys.
And
that is
watching,
and every character is so defined.
Got a good cast. Ross McCall, my wife Eileen Davidson.
Oh, I know.
Don Stark, Jimmy Van Patten, Jennifer Tilly. John O'Hurley.
I wanted
Chad
to see
Lowe.
More Jennifer Tilly. I mean, she's in a couple of good scenes, but man, I could have watched even more of her.
Paul Walter Hauser, who has really gotten very hot.
And
lately,
you know who else is in there? Is a guy, Danny Pardo.
Oh, he's brilliant.
I did a movie with Danny Pardo.
Did you?
He's such a talent.
He is.
He's such a talent. Yeah, I did a movie called Halloween Party with him.
Oh, that's
a couple
great.
Of years ago. You also got reviewed by Richard Roper, and he said, a charming, dryly funny, low-key gem. And I think when he says the word charming, in my mind, it's that there's no, like, blatant sex or, like, language. I mean, it's just, it's like vacation. It's like seeing the movie Vacation. It's just fun.
I like to describe it as Hangover meets The Sting.
The Hangover
is a movie that you can,
Sting.
The Hangover you can keep watching. You go, okay, you put The Hangover and go, oh, I'll watch that again. Because I'm getting a few chuckles out of it.
Yes.
And The Sting was just a beautiful con movie and a gambling movie.
Yeah.
So that's what I like to describe 7 Days to Vegas as. And, it's coming out. We're having fun just talking about it and having made it, it's been a nice accomplishment.
It's super exciting, and you are around poker all the time. So this movie totally rings true. 7 Days to Vegas, again, opening nationally in theaters and on VOD on Friday, September 20th from Gravitas Ventures. You have a couple of websites that people can go to, 7daystovegas.com, and also you can find this movie over on Twitter at 7daystovegas.
Also, the World Poker Tour has Club WPT, and they have set up all kinds of sweepstakes, you know, come into the world, you know, Club WPT, enter these sweepstakes, and you can win all kinds of prizes and, you know, screenings, you know.
It's super fun.
Fly people out to
LA. Everything about
this
is super fun. So let's hear some more poker stories, you guys.
Listen, in the 90s, my game started getting bigger and bigger. And my father was playing it in the 90s. And it went from a game that you could win or lose $2,000-$3,000 to a game, well, in 2005 and six, where you could really lose a car, you know, big money.
Let me ask you something real quick there.
Yeah.
So what is the delineation between a guy who can just lose a car and a gambling addict?
Nothing. Just throw them in the game and see what happens. No. Listen, here's the thing. It's a spice of life. I recommend playing poker. First of all, poker is the only game you can really beat.
Yeah.
All right, out of any gambling game. It's truly the only game you can really beat, which is important to know. However, like myself, I beat poker, but I would blow it in these other things. You know, I loved a sports bet. I like to bet the horses. So basically, a person like me pisses it away down the line. But a lot of players, there's few and far between, can actually hold on to the money. But you can do that in poker if you're the best player at the table in the long run.
You have to give away a lot of your money in taxes, right?
What do you mean?
I mean, not give away, but like you have to pay a lot of taxes on winning. So let's say
if you happen to wind up winning, like in tournaments, they always do, and you know, and
if you go to Vegas and you hit it, you hit $60,000 at a table, you win a lot of money playing poker,
right?
You have to report that.
Of course, they take it right off the top. Yeah.
So who takes it off the top?
Well, if you make a score in Vegas or something like that, they start taking it off the top, just like at the racetrack. If you hit a certain long shot, they take it right off the top, and then
you might
get it back later if you can prove losses. You know.
Do you play now in public? Do you play like you just go sit at a table with strangers?
I still play. I like to play cash games in certain tournaments.
I don't play as much anymore. You could possibly. I'm sure you're not. Obviously, you're not. But is there any way people are thinking you could be cheating because you know so much?
Oh well, you always have to be careful in any gambling venture you're in that you could be cheated. In poker, it's a long shot, and most games are very honorable, so I wouldn't even go there. But over the years, I found a couple people that were taking a little edge and had some codes and stuff like that, and I spotted it, and you have to get these people out, and you have to confront them. It's tough to get the money back, but it can happen. But generally speaking, if you know the people, you're going to be pretty safe.
Yeah. Is there a certain casino you always go to?
No, but we, in Vegas, we, you know, the Bellagio has the biggest games. They have Bobby's Room, where they play for hundreds of thousands, and Doyle Brunson's in that game, and Hellmuth and Mike Sexton and people like that. And I played in that once. You know, it's over my head. But I'm not playing as much anymore. I used to love the game. I liked it when I was on the edge, and it meant something to have a good score. But the losses hurt so bad.
Yeah.
Losses hurt three times as much as the wins do. The win, it's, hey, oh, great, I won some nice money, this is terrific. But when you lose the same amount, it really hurts much, much more. So I've generally taken the needle out of my arm over the last 10, 12 years, and I'm happy. I'm finally happy.
You know? Yeah.
I was happy then, though, too, I have to say.
Yeah, no, I understand. It's just such a funny world, because obviously it's not just about the money. Obviously, it's about the intelligence over the game or winning the. It's definitely on a higher level. It's not just about the money.
Oh, it's the greatest thing in the world is to be able to play poker and outwit your opponents.
Outsmart somebody.
You're saying I outwitted you. I outplayed you. I stole a pot. You were in front, but I knew that you weren't that strong, so I stole it. I bluffed you. I took the money. I took that money away from you. That's an advanced play. And sometimes it backfires. But you have to be bold in poker to be a top player.
Okay,
very bold.
So tell me, as the host, 18 years on this World Poker Tour, when you see these poker players, like, I just want to know about them. What do they have in common? What do they do before the match? Do people leave crying? Do people leave in fits? Is there fighting? What is the environment? Because I really don't know.
Phil Hellmuth is the only one that's left crying. You know, I kiddingly say that people that know poker know him. He is a character, and he's actually a raw deal on the World Poker Tour. But when he takes certain beats, I've actually seen him fall to the ground and going up into a little ball. And he's like, that guy should never have called me. What's going on? You know, he'll just, it's all theatrics, and he is a character. But generally speaking, it hurts. But most people take it like a man. They get up and they shake hands, say, well done. Some have said, they start yelling at the opponent, how could you be in that hand? How dare you know? And they get mad. You
like,
see
in other
all
words,
kinds of
how
reactions.
How can you be in that hand? Like, you only have a pair.
How could you call me?
Why are you doing this?
Which is the worst thing in the world for the game of poker. You don't berate if you're a professional.
Yeah.
You never berate. You never chase the softer spots out of the game.
Yeah.
And a lot of these so-called pros, they can't help themselves. They have to be the big shot. They have to be the know-it-all.
Yeah.
And that's wrong. And that hurts the game in the long run. But they don't know any better.
What's a soft spot? Meaning that why call somebody out on that?
Well,
because
a soft
spot. Because that's legal.
Well, a soft spot would be the player is not a top player, he might give you some soft action that day, not mind losing. He'll play a little weak.
I mean,
he won't, he's not a strong player.
You can bluff, but people can bluff. That's part of the game.
Oh, heck yeah. And
so would they get mad at, like, a novice comes in, some girl comes walking in the casino and she just like all knucklehead and she sits down and, but she's got the money.
Yeah.
She puts down, she wins. They'd be pissed.
Oh, and then she leaves. They'd hate it. But they'd love it if she comes back the next day because they know in the long run, you're going to probably take the money away from the bad players. Yes, that's it. That's what it's all about. How long are you going to play?
And this is all Texas Hold'em, or what are we playing
now? The big game is Texas Hold'em, no limit, you know. And that's the game that's really taken off on the World Poker Tour and around the world. But there's other games. But most people, when they go into a casino or at home games now, like to play no limit Texas Hold'em.
Yeah. And no limit means the
you can bet anything you want in front of you at any time. You could bet your whole stack at any time.
Right.
Back in the day, in the 80s and 90s, finding a no-limit game was very rare. They didn't have much.
They would say like...
It was a 10 and 10 or 10-20 game, the limit. You could bet 10 on after the flop, 20 on 4th Street and the river.
Yeah.
It was a completely different game. It was a limit game.
Yeah.
It's not as much variance that happens. In a no-limit, people can go broke in 3 minutes or people can get rich in 3 minutes. People love that, though.
You personally, do you still like the little games, like sitting at a bar and you're hitting that video poker? Do you do that?
Hate video poker.
Uh-huh.
You know, that just gives you no... I mean, I don't even play it because it's an insult. I like to play a game where I feel like I have an edge.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've learned and taken my hits long enough to know that I'm, you know, a top player, in especially cash games.
Okay.
So I don't want to give that edge away and play a silly video poker where I have no chance.
Yeah. But I don't, like, in other words, a poker game then, even if it's a championship or not, I mean, there are odds for the house in some regard. What are the odds? There's 52, you know, 52 cards. And what? But what, so, yeah. Oh, they take a cut
take
of
a
the
cut.
Pot. I
yeah,
see.
They take cuts of the pot, or they take I half see. Hour, every half hour, they'll take $9 from each player out of the game.
So it's not like blackjack where they have to hit on 17 or there's these certain rules that they always have the edge, or like a lot of casinos where if you tie, they take it.
Exactly.
It's not like that. This is just they take from the winnings. So that does make it more pure.
It's very clean. In the long run, they'll make the money. Everybody else will lose. Bottom line.
It's interesting. I mean, I love gambling as well. Years ago, I used to be a flight attendant, and on my overnights, I would go to Vegas, and I would go to slots of fun. It was right by
Circus.
Right by Circus. Right. And I love to gamble. Now, I feel like my whole life is too much of a gamble to gamble. Like,
so
I just feel like I'm, you know what I mean? So it's just a fine line. In other words, to be a healthy gambler is a fine line. People are either seem too extreme, too desperate. Or sometimes, like, if I go to a casino and I see all those old people who came off a bus and they're sitting in front of slot machines smoking and the thing.
Yeah.
But then I think to myself, well, they enjoy that.
I think the same thing.
So what's the problem?
There's no problem. Look, if you can control it, they get off that bus, they smoke the cigarettes, they're playing the slots. That's their excitement for the year. They're going to be talking about that. Some of them might win.
Sure.
In the long run, they'll all lose, probably. But that's okay. You're paying for that entertainment. Same thing at a poker table when you sit down. You know what? Some people have a very lonely existence.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do with themselves. You go to the casino or you go to the home game, you've made friends.
But
in fact, you make even more friends when you lose.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. How does it correspond to... Yeah, because people know that you lose and they're going to take your money.
Yeah,
but how does that correspond to like horse racing? Like how? Because horse racing,
same thing.
But you're not in the game.
Well, my father was a degenerate horse player. I loved it for years and lost a lot of money out there for years. A lot of fun. But they take a huge, they take 18% right off the top. So you're very tough to overcome and win there. However, my father would go to the racetrack. He was like the Pied Piper there. Everybody, hey, Dick, how are you?
Aww.
Who do you like, Dick? And he has 50 friends out there.
That's so fun.
Yeah,
it's
a club. It's a club. And for 6 hours, you're escaping life. You're going to the club. You're paying your dues. Yeah, you'll lose some money, but that's what it's all about.
And also, you're with your peers. You're with other people, not just family. You know what I mean? You're with like out in the world.
Yeah, it's a shame because horse racing is really dying in the United States, except for certain places.
Did you hear about Santa Anita? What's been going on out there? Like
30
horses dead in 6 months?
More so than they were over the years. And now they're making a huge thing about it. And they should. I mean, this is maybe these horses are a little sore, letting them run when they're a little too sore. So they're trying to fix the problem. I hope they don't ever get rid of the sport. It is a great, great sport. I love it. And going down to Del Mar or Saratoga, it's
so
filled
beautiful.
Up and people love it. Yeah.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Do you ever... gamble at all the multitude of casino, the Indian reservations. How do I say it? Like Pechanga or Marengo or Tahinga, whatever. There's so many. There seem to
Yeah, I mean, they
do you go there too?
Popped up all over. Mostly in Vegas and Borgata and Atlantic City and down in Hard Rock, which is an Indian casino, Hard Rock casino.
I don't know that. Interesting.
In Florida, in Miami.
Oh.
So yeah, I
oh,
do.
Wow.
I do. I mean, look, this entertainment back in the 70s, you couldn't find a casino. It was just Vegas.
Right.
And as a little, you know, gambler myself, I was just always looking for action. I'd have to go to school and I'd pitch quarters against other kids, you know, to get some action. We'd play three
dad.
Card Monty, you
what
know?
Would he, oh my gosh. Well, he taught you, obviously.
Yeah, he did.
That is damn funny.
Yeah. Oh, he never blinked an eye. He said, look, it's going to help your smarts. He goes, if you can figure out how to beat poker, you can do anything in the world.
Well, that's another reason why 7 Days to Vegas works so well, at least for me, it's so entertaining because everybody's got a little gambling in them. Everybody's been to Vegas. Everybody knows that road. You got some tremendous shots, and I'm going to say it had to be drones, right? How did you get those shots, like, way high up?
Because we shot the thing right out there in the middle of the desert, and we do a lot of drone shots.
It wasn't
used to be
cranes.
Helicopter.
It used to be
helicopter, but nowadays you don't have to do that when you're filming. So
that's
did it through
so
drones.
So beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah,
those
I like
shots,
that, too.
It's just, like, so wide open and expansive.
Yeah.
I never get tired of that landscape.
Me too. I'm the same way. And every time I go to Vegas, I never fly. I drive because I just love the desert.
It's like full of promise.
Yes.
I know. It is getting a lot closer, right? LA and Vegas. It seems to like be filling in. The gaps are getting filled in. Not so much expanse.
I hear you.
So did you get physically exhausted playing this role in 7 Days to Vegas?
Oh, yeah.
Because you were walking.
Look, it's 280 miles from the valley to Vegas. That's what the bet is all about. Can you do it in 7 days?
So what's that a day then?
40 miles a day average.
A day.
You can walk or run. There was a lot of contingencies in the film. And of course, shooting it, because we were out in the desert and we'd have 10-hour days, 12-hour days of shooting. And I'm in the desert and in that suit, I have to walk to Vegas in a suit. And I'm just, it goes beyond because I wrote it with Steve Alper, who's a wonderful co-writer, and produced it and starring in it with Eileen and my brother Jimmy. And so much
great.
At stake. I mean, I was so sweating so much, just drenched with sweat. I was exhausted, but you don't even think about things like that because there was so much at stake. You love it so much.
And you're having so much fun.
It's fun. It was fun to shoot.
I mean, you're in your element, man.
Exactly.
And it's the whole script is just written so well, and you know you had a lot to say in that, so it's happening what you want to happen.
Exactly. So you don't feel the pain.
You don't feel the pain. Another part I thought was super funny in the movie, I actually would have liked to have seen more of it, was you in the beginning of the film as a pitch man.
Yeah.
Because I've done a lot of that in my life. I've done probably 25 or 30 infomercials where you're holding up the product and you're, you know, the mop or the whatever.
Yep.
And you did that so funny.
Oh, that's funny.
People were losing it in the movie, laughing.
Oh, thank you. Well, at the beginning of the film, he's down and out and he has to go, you know, he used to be an actor, but then he's getting washed up and he has to do his, you know, a lot of pitch work.
Yeah.
So
and that,
we show that.
Honestly, that's not even down and out work anymore. I mean, that's even hard to get. I mean,
oh, of course.
But you were really good at
it. Thank you.
I thought it was so funny. And then the progression of the poker game. So you were in these tiny little games and you could see them getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah. And it wasn't the good thing about this film, you think it's not a poker movie whatsoever.
Yeah,
you don't care about one hand when you do see a poker hand. It's all about the characters.
It's
bigger
all
than
the
life.
Characters.
Fun characters.
All fun.
By the way, the reason why I wanted to write this is because other gambling films, which I love the whole genre of con movies and gambling, are usually very, very dark and there's no joy. That's not the life I know in the gambling world. I know crazy people and fun and laughs.
Right.
I wanted to show that.
That's nice.
And there was the bets that we made in this craziest bet of all time. Can he walk from LA to Vegas in 7 days?
Yeah.
And so you see crazy off-the-wall characters, and that's what I want to show in this film.
It is so fun. It really is a blast of a movie. I mean, when people are cheering from the audience, something is going right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you and Eileen got to be in it. She plays your wife in the movie.
She plays my wife.
And it's perfect.
Eileen, she's won a couple Emmys with Young and the Restless.
I know. She's like a consummate actress. She's so accomplished.
She talked me into making it. She said, Vinny, you got to write this story because it's just too good. I said, I don't want to write it. You have to write this. Okay. So it took 3 years to write it with Steve Alper, and we finally did it. But you know what the great thing about Eileen is? She loves gambling herself.
Oh,
little
great.
Did I know.
Little
did I know.
Not at the same table as you, though,
No, not even
she
poker.
She would
go She's
do her thing in blackjack.
We bet sports. We bet all the NFL games and tennis. And she goes, I want half the action. I go, okay, honey, you got half the action.
Are you talking about
And we watch it together at home.
At home, okay. You're not talking about the big sports bets.
Not we don't go to the arena. We'll watch all the tennis and whatever we bet at home. And she gets 50 50% of my action. And we usually have to pay the bookie at the end of the year a lot of money. Yeah. But she doesn't. She's a great loser. As am I, you know, we pay up the money and that's it. It's kept our marriage together in some strange
way. This is
going to
be a really dumb question, but you say you paid the bookie. So a bookie is a legitimate job.
Yeah. I mean, when you want action and you want to do it on a phone call or your computer, you can, there's certain bookies you can still go to. They don't.
No, but I'm just saying it's a legitimate job for them. They pay taxes and they're called a what?
They're bookies.
They're called a bookie.
Some of them have, you know, down to the Caribbean, you know, and then they have people that will pick up the money for them in LA. And that's what you got to deal with. So, you know.
It just seems, it seems nefarious.
The bookies love us. That's all I know.
What is a bookie?
The bookie. I'm sorry.
Oh, the bookie.
The bookies love us. Because at the end of the year, after Super Bowl, they go, okay, it's time, Vince. Yeah. You ready to pay me? Okay, I'll meet you at the
certain
spot.
Okay, and your son, you have a couple of sons,
three
right?
You have three sons.
And what is their gambling life?
Oh, thank goodness they don't like it. They don't like to gamble. I'm so relieved.
That's it, man.
They have some sort of interest. Yeah. I never pushed it. And for some reason, they're just smarter than I was. Yeah. And they do not have the bug. I got it from my father. And my oldest brother didn't have that as much, Nels. So there you go.
That's an interesting name, Nels.
Yeah.
N-E-L-L-S.
Yes,
Scandinavian. Who has that name?
My father played, I remember Mama, and he played the part for 9 years on TV in the late 50s.
Wow.
He was named Nels.
You're
and
kidding
so that's
me.
Where he
that
named our oldest
so
son.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
Nels Van Patten. I wish I could think of some other characters that he played, because I'd love to throw that out right now as a joke. Like, you could be called... You know, you're lucky you're not called. I'm trying to think of some other characters he played.
Oh, my father
Your
played?
Your dad, yeah. Some of the other characters.
Oh, gosh, I don't even know.
I know. It's too many to list. But what was his name in It Is Enough? I don't remember that.
Tom Bradford.
Oh, yeah, Tom Bradford.
He's based
Nancy
on a real guy.
Yeah, of course, Well, Tom wouldn't have been a bad name. No. Hey, listen, I'm so excited about this movie, 7 Days to Vegas. I have seen it myself. It is damn funny. It is enjoyable.
Yeah,
it is an enjoyable movie is what it is. I just love it. So best of luck with that. I really appreciate it.
I love talking to you. This was so much fun.
So much fun. Come down and play Story Smash sometime at the Improv.
I will.
You will laugh so hard. I'm telling you, it is 1 hour of tight, just fun.
Okay.
Game show. Yeah, you like to.
I'd love to
You like to gamble? You can gamble on the storytellers. We'll make it a part of the show.
Okay.
All right, you guys. Listen, I've got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Head over to storyworthypodcast.com. Would you do that? Because if you go to my website, all that other stuff falls into place. You know what I'm talking about? Story Smash, my other show, Screwed Up Stories. You can get to my website. You can get to my Patreon page, you guys. I've got all sorts of levels over there, and you can donate to me over there, and you know I appreciate it. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Vince Van Patten, thank you so much. Really.
My pleasure.
This has been a blast. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.